Hey there, folks. We're kicking off today's episode with a cup of tea from the Nepal Tea Collective. Nepal Tea is a social enterprise based in New York that distributes the freshest organically grown teas to different parts of the world directly from smallholder farmers in the beautiful country of, you guessed it, Nepal. You can join us for a cup of tea and be part of the global impact they're creating by visiting nepalteacollective.com. That's nepalteacollective.com. Yikes, my cup of tea is already getting cold. So why don't you join me and hop into today's episode?
Born and raised in Zimbabwe, Wendy Mubaiwa moved to the United Kingdom in her teens. After her studies, she embarked on an unconventional career path that eventually led to an exciting journey in the startup world. With entrepreneurial parents as role models, she was drawn into the world of entrepreneurship from a very young age. Today, Wendy's passion and expertise shine as she serves as a venture partner at Essia, a venture studio and venture capital firm that partners with entrepreneurs to create, invest, launch, and scale ventures of the future. Outside of Essia, Wendy helps solo founders and co-founding teams to bring their business ideas to life. In this episode, we will dive deep into the essential steps for students and professionals looking to kickstart their entrepreneurial journeys, starting from a simple side hustle and scaling it to new heights. Join us as we uncover the incredible insights Wendy has gained as an entrepreneur and advocate for founders. She firmly believes that with the right support systems, anyone who has the passion and drive can become a thriving entrepreneur.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are, whoever you are. Welcome to the Boardroom Banter podcast. You're joining myself, Sean Karanja, in the studio, and we have a fantastic guest lined up for you guys today. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast long enough knows that I am a venture capital, entrepreneurship, business geek. So any opportunity that we get to speak to anyone who is knee deep in that world, we'll absolutely take it and have a blast during that conversation. I hope everyone is well in the meantime. And without further ado, I'd want us to jump into who we have in studio. It's a conversation that we have been lining up for quite a bit of time. And I feel like the specific angle that we're about to take in figuring out a lot of themes around how to be a startup founder and, you know, transitioning from spaces like school, university, getting into entrepreneurship or, a more traditional work setting, and how you can, you know, set up side hustles, which eventually turn into, you know, entrepreneurial ventures that can scale. These are some of the conversations that we're going to be having today with someone who literally scales startups for a living. In the boardroom, joining me today is Wendy Mubaiwa, who is a venture partner at Essia, where she supports founders and their teams to find the best route to access capital and build their business teams thoroughly. She does have a very fascinating background, even before that, of working in the education space. So she has a very big focus on upskilling, and in the past run a venture where she did that and was pretty successful at that. And so right now she's super passionate about helping founders with strategic advice and key business expertise so that they don't have to do it alone. She's also passionate about education, as I had mentioned, and is out to partner with innovative entrepreneurs wherever they are in order to give them the capital and the support that they need to scale. We're going to be having an interesting conversation with Wendy today. Without further ado, Wendy, thank you so much for your time and welcome to the boardroom. How's everything going?
No, great. Thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be a part of this podcast. So thank you for inviting me.
Lovely, Wendy. A lot of times, you know, we go out and we stalk the LinkedIn profiles of the guests that we're about to have. And, you know, a lot of what our audience just heard in that intro was, you know, some of the stuff that they could find on LinkedIn. But I'm curious to hear from you. Who is Wendy today, and perhaps how would you describe your work to, let's say, a 10-year-old?
Yeah, that's a winding road, I guess. For easy understanding, obviously, what's on my LinkedIn is, you know, titles and so on. And it helps people to place somebody as, okay, she's a venture partner, so she works in this world, or she's done this and done that. So I guess that's the basic stuff, as you said. But, you know, who am I? How did my career span out in the last 10 years? So basically, I like to call myself a lifelong learner, learning in every sphere. My career started off, just as normal. You finish university and you decide, actually, I just want to get a job, whatever job. I got whatever job and, you know, found out that actually, you know, I may have just jumped too quickly. So I started my career in retail. And, you know, lo and behold, I got promoted quite quickly, went into management, got into operations, and, you know, moved on to senior management, went into corporate sustainability, worked for an amazing company that makes its own or produces its own food and, you know, works around sustainable production of food. And out of that, the pandemic obviously happened. A lot of mindsets changed. Mine did as well. I found myself in the startup world. Basically, I was upskilling because we knew that the world was going in another direction. And I could sense, coming from a retail background, that a lot of things going on within stores, within even within the corporate setting of retail was changing, the landscape was changing. So I needed to upskill. As I was upskilling, started a business by accident, really. It wasn't meant to be anything that was supposed to become permanent because I was looking for a job. My career was at a certain level. I had aspirations to get to directorship. I was nearly there. So it was like, this is where I'm going and this is what I'm doing. But I've always felt that being at work, I was quite inhibited in my ideas. I have a lot of ideas. I come up with a lot of ways of working. I have things I wanted to explore. But anyone who's worked in corporate understands, you know, the hierarchy, especially large organizations, the bureaucracy, the cans and can't do's. Kind of limits your creativity. And I had an opportunity to join another founder to start a business. And this was all to do with training people who want to go into tech. And it was all based around making students or people who have just graduated prepared for the world of work, but more in the digital sense. So preparing, you know, students, graduates, for the world of in the digital world. So yeah, pretty much I think 2020, I found myself pretty much hovering around that environment. And the business actually, as I said, was an accident, but it went really well. So we entered quite a lot of competitions because we were bootstrapping. We needed money at every stage. So any competitions we could enter, we did. We mainly made it to finals, and eventually we did go to the Mayor of London Entrepreneurs Awards and managed to get to the finals there, although we didn't win, but that's when the doors started opening. And as they opened, we got into universities and we started working with students within the universities, preparing them for the world of work, coming up with a module that would help them as well to be able to know and understand what is expected of you in industry. And that's what opened my eyes. And then eventually I found out that actually there is a need for this. However, I know you did explain that, you know, it was a huge success. It went really well, but unfortunately the startup didn't quite, we all split up and we went our separate ways. And this is how I got into ESSIA. That's how I got into the VC world. That's how I got into the startup world, into the venture building. So Estia is a startup studio. Some people like to call it venture studio. So we build businesses internally, but we also, help other founders who are building either through investments. So we fund blockchain, prop tech, fintech projects and startups. So what we then do is we can then help them build their teams. And that was the key thing that we found when startups or founders come to us. They come to us looking to build their teams, or they're looking for funding so that they can grow their teams and scale. So that's how I got involved into scaling businesses and offering strategic advice, working with particular founders, depending on what area they're trying to grow their business in. But mainly the scaling up is one of the probably the biggest challenges that most founders will face in the initial starts of their business.
Definitely. When I look at my own journey in entrepreneurship, a lot of the problems that I had faced in, previous endeavors had always been people problems, right? The easy ones to fix, I'd say, are probably the product problems, because it's always a case of, do we need to build something new or different? Do we need to tweak the market that we are trying to basically target? Those I think tend to have solutions. And not to say that people problems don't, but a lot of times when we as startup founders or entrepreneurs go into business, we focus a lot more on product than people. So it's actually quite refreshing to hear that, from your past experience with people, you've made that a core focus also on the type of support that you give to startups. I want us to dig a bit deeper into your story, right? And what do people need to know about, let's say, your, early childhood experiences or upbringing? I know you're currently based in UK, but you're also Zimbabwean heritage, etc. Speak to us a bit more about that.
Originally I was born in Zimbabwe, I came to the UK when I was about 16, 17. I've always had entrepreneurial parents. My dad, he did quite a few things, in his own way. I think my mom was probably the most successful entrepreneur in the family. So she ran a canteen. She had her own school where she teaches women to sew their own clothing, or make their own home furnishings. So it was really work, living around that and seeing, my dad trying a few things, my mom doing a few things. And I've kept that in my mind that actually, you know what? Having something that helps others, because that's what I saw. I saw that the business wasn't just for us, it was for helping others have a livelihood, helping to solve a problem. There was always somebody who benefited other than ourselves. And I really liked that commitment. So upbringing was basically, pretty much around watching my parents, run businesses, but at the same time have normal jobs, 9 to 5s. So they just didn't do business. It was a combination of work and business. So that work ethic, that running two things at the same time came from them. I've always been an academic, in terms of I love to, I'm curious about the world of academics. I won't say I read a lot, but I do like to read a lot of things around, topical subjects. How things are built, how things become, or what's the history of things, how did they become where they are? So, I've really implemented a lot of things that I've studied. So I think 2 years ago, 2022, I finished my master's, and I did a master's in strategic leadership. And throughout that whole module, I was literally going in, doing a module, taking that module and implementing it into the business because I was running a business at the same time as studying. And I used to see results. And I was really amazed that theory, when you apply it, it really does shape and you can actually see the results. So a lot of people who would turn around and say, "Oh, Wendy, why are you wasting your time going to university? You could be just earning money or you could be doing something else. Why are you doing that? You've already got a degree. Why are you doing your master's?" But actually, when you implement what you learn, I think that's the key. Implementation is what then brings, results of what you're actually going out to learn. So I've found that, growing up, that was something that I really enjoyed doing, implementing things that I learned. So that's why I call myself a lifelong learner. And also, I did a bit of public speaking at school. It's all kind of faded away, but there are various things that I've done in growing up, and I just give thanks to, my family, my parents, who've always been very supportive. And always, given the direction that I needed. But a lot of the things that have happened to me, I guess, have been through just being curious and wanting to find out what the world is all about. What can I do? I'm not afraid to try something new. In fact, if somebody says to me, "Wendy, you can't," that's when I'm like, "Why can't I? I'm sure I can." And then I give it a go. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me. I have a love for nature, the just natural world. If I go on holiday, it has to be a safari. But I also love seeing the community out in the villages, so out on farms, seeing young children. My mind has always gone to their future. What happens to that child in the village, who doesn't have access to the outside world, who doesn't know that there's a digital revolution going on, who doesn't know that COVID has changed the way the world lives? What's going to happen to them in 10 years, 15 years from now when all jobs or most jobs become digital? And that was something that really struck me. And I've now come to a point where I want to do something to help those who may not have relatives who've gone, to the other side of the world. All they know is the environment that they're in. And my passion is to go out and really, expose the world to those who may not be able to see the world for what it is, and give them an opportunity from when they're still young, because they still have a whole life ahead of them. And if I see it, if I'm the one who sees it, I should be the one, looking to see how I can help. And I it can be in a very little way, it can be just one farm, one village, I don't know. But something that I can do to bring, education, relevant education to those who may not know or may not have the exposure of it.
Wow, that's a story that I definitely resonate with, especially the angle of, having parents who are entrepreneurial, who are at any point of time doing one thing or the other. And that really informed for me the outlook that I had on things like opportunities, things like there's a point at which you can get in your career where entrepreneurship can be an option, but a lot of times it's that upskilling or that exposure to a different way of thinking or a different set of tools that maybe you could employ to solve problems around you that is that make or break between you transitioning from one space to another. So I'd like us to touch a bit on that, right? So you had spent a bit of time in corporate and then went out on a limb and started your startup. There's lots of people who are either in a school setting, like maybe a uni student, or someone who currently is at a job, and for them that's their track to, a successful life, in one way or another. But they have entrepreneurial hopes and dreams and ambitions. How would you advise that type of a person to take up their entrepreneurial dreams? If maybe you were to give like a step-by-step or some best practices that you've observed from maybe some of the founders that SCR has been supporting or your own personal experience in the space.
Yeah, No, that's a very good and relevant question because there are more businesses and startups out there that people can get into. It's never been easier to start a business than it is now. You can be in your home and just literally open your laptop and you've got a business going. So definitely you're going to find a lot of people while they're working, while they're studying, thinking of how can I also have my own business. But what I would say step by step is that I wouldn't call it step by step because nothing is linear. You know, everyone has a journey that can zigzag, that can take different turns, life comes in. But I would say things to consider would be, you know, why do you want to start a business in the first place? Do you just want a business to have just extra money to top up what you're currently doing? Do you want to be rich and be known? You know, there are right reasons, and I won't call them wrong reasons, but not so appropriate reasons for starting businesses, because starting a business is probably the most difficult thing that anyone can do. If you like something predictable, something low risk, I would say stay in a job. So that's the first thing, assess why you want to actually, you know, go into business. So once you know why you want to go into business and you feel it's valid, you could be one of those that wants to change the world. You could be one of those that actually wants to fill in a gap. You've seen a problem, you've got a solution, and you want to put it into play. Or you could be someone who's literally thinking, I want to build a sustainable business that will span generations, that I can hand over to my children, you know, leave a legacy. There are many, you know, valid reasons why people do that. But once you've worked that out, I would say then consider where you are now and what you can do with where you are. I would advise that if you're a student and you're studying something relevant, or maybe you're about to choose what you want to do and you know you've got entrepreneurial ambitions, choose something that is in line with where you want to go with your entrepreneurial ambitions. Try not to be sidetracked. So if you suddenly go and study dentistry, for example, but you want to, you know, you want to go into agriculture and you want to build an agricultural app or something, you know, some technology that will help people in agriculture, you probably want to think, is this really what I want to do? Is this relevant? So before, especially those who haven't chosen the direction they want to go in, pick something that you know has either elements of what you want to do in your entrepreneurial ambition, or that will help you to have knowledge, deep knowledge of that area that you want to go into. Then I would also advise that those who are already studying, maybe you've made a decision that wasn't quite right, like, you know, you've studied the wrong subject completely that's got nothing to do with where your passions lie. I would say that continue, but get a job that is relevant in the area you want to start a business. Now, for those who are already in work and you're thinking, I want to go in and, you know, I want to have something on the side, I want to start building something, I would say never leave your job until you know you are ready to go. Side hustles, I would always recommend have your side hustle, stay in work. But there will be a time when the decision will come that you need to make a choice. So it will take hours, hard work, late nights, weekends, missing birthdays, missing friendship gatherings, a lot of that because you're trying to double up. You're trying to keep your 9 to 5 and you're also trying to build a business on the side. But I would say it is probably the most rewarding route because if you can manage you know, doubling up on a job and then also having, you know, a business on the side, whatever, you know, when you do finally leave your job and you go into business, whatever comes your way, you are already, you know, ready for it. You're equipped. You've got the resilience that it takes. So I would say, you know, maintain that job as much as you can, but you can't do it for too long. Otherwise your side hustle remains a side hustle. If you want to progress and transition and then go into actual, I now have a business, I'm an entrepreneur, or I'm a startup founder, you will need to make that decision and leave what you're doing. Because when you have mixed focus, you don't scale, you don't progress. You need to have one focus and you put your energies in one place. So those are the probably the starts that I would say things to consider.
Wendy, do you think that when a person is making the decision to transition from, let's say, work and take their side hustle more seriously? Actually, I probably have two questions about this, because one is acknowledging the fact that entrepreneurship is not for everyone, right? There's some people who will get their job or get into a certain profession and just excel at that and just do really well at that in their corporate setting, etc. There's that, and that's okay. So that's also one thing I've been learning, that that is okay, and that is a valid path, because as an entrepreneur, you also can't expect everyone to be an entrepreneur. You need people to work in your business as well, and even the types of people you attract and bring. We always need to make sure that we understand that everyone has their own path. That's number one. So that's my disclaimer. So we're not out here telling everyone on the podcast, like, quit your job today and go out and build something. It's not for everyone. But when did you think that for the people that it like they feel deeply, okay, this thing is for me, what should the goal be? So perhaps there's a side hustle and they want extra cash, or someone else is trying to build a unicorn, right? A company valued at $1 billion plus. What do you think is an appropriate goal? And how to just think about goal setting in the framework of making that decision to transition into entrepreneurship? Because everyone wants money.
Yeah, of course. And it has to make your business has to make money. It can't just exist. But no, interesting question. I guess, everyone is different. Everyone's success factors are different, or what they feel is, am I, doing this for the right reasons? They're all different. And I think it's important to work out in your own mind, what your goal is, right? Some people, as I said, want to build what we call, in VC world, lifestyle businesses. In my own experience, we get a lot of people, submit pitch decks. They come and they pitch their businesses, and you find out that it's actually just a lifestyle business. When we say lifestyle, it's not scalable. It's not scalable. It's not something that it's probably quite labor intensive, probably it's brick and mortar. Or
Could
it's
you give an
just a passion.
example, maybe, of
Oh, an
the type
example.
of, yeah.
So basically you might have a food-based business. So maybe you're trying to make a sauce. It's a really good sauce. You've probably been making it in your kitchen quite a lot. And you really like the taste. Your friends and family love it. Somebody says, "Oh, why don't you try out and, and get a business out of it?" Now, you may not automatically be able to scale that. And when we say scale, we're talking about will it go global, right? VCs are always looking at how much money can I get out of this in 3 to 5 years? I need to exit, or I need, this company needs to IPO, but, X20 of what you're, what it's currently making is what, VCs are looking to get back. So can you do that in the span of 3 years? Can you grow that business? Now, it's going to probably be very difficult to do that with a food business that's making a sauce, maybe it's one sauce, but there are ways that you can be innovative about it and scale it. There's one example. I think there's one example that I found. There's this man. He comes from a background where his family does printing, so they've got a printing business, and all they do is they print magazines. They print for companies, and it's a family business. It's been very steady, doing well. Wasn't doing anything sort of globally or doing anything other than what it was doing, and then the son came up with something innovative. And he was thinking more of sustainability. He was thinking about how can I make this business move into the 21st century? I don't know how many people print anymore, anyways. But when people print these days, it's all about digital, documentation. It's no longer about actual paper printing. So he needed to change and to scale that and to make it a business that can actually, go further than where it is. And what he did was he started printing paper that he actually turned into sustainable material. So it's paper that's decomposable. And he actually put seeds into the paper so that when children, and he would print storybooks, and when children would read the books, when they finish reading the books, they can then recycle the books by planting them into the ground. And then whatever seeds is in that paper will then grow, and then it becomes whatever seed it was that was made or that was put in the paper. But what happens was immediately that innovation of printing a new style of paper material, putting in sustainability into it, opens you up to a whole bigger world that's further than just printing for magazines or newspapers. And it also brings in something sustainable, something good for the environment, and also very good for children as well. And he's just become global. I think he's now in America, trying to open up offices there. So he's printing books, children's books. So he writes children's books, but then there's a sustainable element about it, and it's become quite a global craze. So I think, something like that, you can turn something lifestyle, very steady, consistent into something innovative, but you need to be intentional about it. So I would say a lot of people would come with lifestyle businesses and they would say, I want money, I want 100,000 for X, to do XYZ, and that's not feasible. So going back to what you asked, it's really important that your goals are very clear. Are you trying to be an innovative business? Are you just wanting a lifestyle business that maintains your life or gives you a better life, and helps your family, and that's about it? Are you trying to be disruptive? Although being disruptive can be a challenge to attain, but a lot of people think that they can be disruptive, and there have been a few examples, but you need to set out your goal. Then you can then understand, okay, now I'm in a job. I want to move from where I am to being a founder. As I said, it's not like you mentioned, it's not for everyone. If it's not for everyone, you need to be very clear what you want to do and how you want to do it. So once you have placed yourself, you know what goals you want, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a lifestyle business. There's nothing wrong with just having a brick and mortar business, by the way. All of these businesses will cater for a lifestyle that you're looking for. However, being a startup and you decide that you are going to leave your job and you're now making that final decision, consider how it's going to impact your life. Consider the stage of your life. Where are you in life at the moment? If you're a student, how do you want to live? Because a lot of the money you will be spending initially, especially if you're bootstrapping and you don't want to go invest away, you will need to save. You will need to have some kind of money. Bootstrap does not mean you don't use any money. You should have something to start your business out. But I would say be very calculated about it. How much do you have put aside? What can you then do, in the interim to make some more money? And I would always say to anyone who then goes into business, you've made that move, find the fastest way to monetize. There are ways, but you need to find the fastest, quickest way to monetize. There are so many different avenues that people use. I won't mention some of the names because I don't know whether you've got criteria about advertising, but there are platforms out there that you can test your products, right? Let's say you've got an idea, you're not sure whether it's validated. You can use some of these platforms. There are communities on there that will test your product. They will review your product. Sometimes you can even monetize on them. So validation is key before you try to step out. And I would say do that while you are considering to move from your job into stepping out into actual business.
That makes a lot of sense. And when we think of de-risking your entrepreneurial journey, I like that in the beginning of the conversation, towards the start of it, you had mentioned that, it is important that you don't immediately abandon your job in pursuit of, this thing, because quote unquote hustle culture has it that, you should drop everything and, put all your eggs in this one basket, go all in, all in, all in. And the truth is that life is it's a lot more nuanced than that. And you do have to be a bit more strategic. And so I really appreciate you giving us, a couple of guidelines as to how we can think about executing and actually taking the business a bit more seriously. When we go back to the conversation about people, I'd like us to talk a bit about founders. So a big part of the work that you do and that even you on a personal level have been very passionate about and very vocal about is that founders need better support structures around them in order to make sure that they're doing well, just as holistic, humans. So not just do you have money in your pocket, but also how's your mental health? Are you okay? Do you need to talk? Do you need a community to be building with and around? Walk us through a bit about your interest in founder support structures and some of the things that you have seen work and maybe not work in terms of giving founders what they need in order to be their best selves and bring their best to the table at all times when building their business.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I'm actually side hustling. I have a few ideas. As I said, I've
You
got quite a
practice
lot of
what you preach.
ideas. Exactly. I am side hustling. I have a business pretty much that's come from or stemmed from the whole idea of, the well-being of a founder. Founders at the moment are always told, or you read a lot, that if you're going to start a business, expect to fail. It's going to be very hard, which it is. It's not a lie. It's the truth. It's not easy, and you're not going to sleep. You're probably going to lose a lot of friends and all sorts of things. And my own personal experience, as a new founder in the startup world, I mean, I came into entrepreneurship at a time when the world had changed as well. So the way we work, the way we communicate, no one was going to the office in 2020, so you all had to, collaborate online. And that's how I've known how to do business. And all I can say is, that change in itself, you need as much support as you can. When I was in my first business, I think we literally just were learning as we were going. We never really had guidance in terms of others who've been there before, done it. But also, it was difficult to find someone who's been there, done that, because we were all living in a new world. Everyone was trying to work it out. So it was quite challenging, but we learned very quickly. We were in the frying pan, consistently every single day, because something new would come up. We would need to find the right tool to do this. We needed to develop something digitally. We needed to meet people online and convey our message very clearly and concisely. Looking at our business model, we changed our business model twice, because initially it was going to be very labor intensive. When we found out that it was very difficult to, to get the right people in to do what we're looking for, it was mayhem, but in that mayhem, we learned a lot, but we made so many mistakes. Not only mistakes, but sometimes very embarrassing mistakes. We didn't sleep a lot, right? We only kind of bumped into the right solutions because we bumped into the right person. So the well-being of a founder, honestly, in that whole journey, you can find yourself on the other side pretty lonely sometimes, because all the friends that know that you're super busy and you're not available. The people you meet are probably people you sort of meet here and there, because you're in a meeting or you have to pitch, or you're basically pitching to an investor. We spent a lot of time doing that. However, I started, and my side hustle at the moment, I'm looking at solopreneurs because I feel that solopreneurs really do have a hard time. I've started also looking at startup teams because a lot of those have been coming in, but my focus is all about support. Always having someone who has done it before, who can guide you through all the twists and turns, navigate you away from the pitfalls. Had we had that in the first business, I think it would have made our life less painful. When you come out on the other side as a founder without any support, you really do come out bruised in terms of, I hear stories of people who miss very important engagements and family members don't get to see them. And I think it's not right for people to live life like that. A founder's journey should be an exhilarating, an exciting, sort of journey. And what I've done, or what I'm putting in place, is finding ways or finding the pain points that many founders find themselves. So, for example, solopreneurs, they find themselves trying to do everything, pretty much being, the finance, the operations, the person who delivers the service, pretty much everything. So we look at ways of automating the business as much as possible. That's one of those solutions. And also, being part of a network of people who can cover your skills gap. You, as one person, you can't have every skill that's needed in a business. And as a solopreneur, you cannot stay a solopreneur for too long, especially if you start to actually see progress in your business. So we found different methods of, or I've brought in people in my networks to help out founders. So let's say they've got no idea how to go about branding. I have people I've worked with and they can sort of guide them through the process, sometimes actually work alongside them. So I've started ingraining myself into the startups that I support. So I become that strategic advisor, sometimes play the role of a team player, and actually get into the weeds of their business. And they don't feel alone. They don't feel like they're doing it on their own. They feel more courageous to carry on with their business because a lot of solopreneurs, because they're on their own, one disappointment can actually shatter the whole thing and they just don't go ahead with it. But I've kind of learned that when you ingrain yourself, you make yourself their partner, you begin to see results because they know that they can lean on you until such a time they found their co-founder, which is another story on its own, finding a co-founder, the right way. But finding someone who can work with you, support you, you may not need a co-founder. You might need your first employee, but my goal is to get them to a place where their systems or their businesses run smoothly operationally in the background, but they also understand the nature of their business and they have the support so they can always come to someone and say, look, I'm stuck here. What do I do? I need this and I need that. So one of the things that I always recommend, and I'll recommend to anyone, who is looking into going into entrepreneurship, never ever try to go at it on your own. Build your networks. The people in your networks are the ones who will refer you to the right person who can help you. A lot of people out there are kind enough to give, sweat support or actual just coming in and helping you out for a period of time. That's how we made it in our first business. We had, our CMO was a fractional CMO, but she only worked with us until, we got funding and then we managed to pay her. So go out there and build really strong relationships and start working out who are the best people you can bring into your business, who can help you initially, who would love what or be excited with what you're doing, and then take it from there. But the well-being of a founder is so crucial because that's the difference between continuing with your business or ending it. And those statistics that we hear that 95% of startups fail or businesses fail in the first year, it's as a result, sometimes not even of, the fact that it didn't work, but the fact that a founder got discouraged and didn't face the challenge. If you fail, you really should just pick yourself up and continue, or don't look at it as failure. I don't like to call it failure. I like to call it as, it's a learning step, or it's causing you to turn, in a way that your business will work. So that's really important. So yeah, I would really advocate that, more people out there who've been there, done that, support other startups, support entrepreneurs who have got interesting ideas that you're probably passionate about as well. Give some of your time so that they get their foot, off, they have the right start. And when they have the right start, they can progress and then last longer. Hopefully that 95% could be reduced.
Very fascinating that you mentioned things like automation and an individual's network or even mentorship as tools that they could use to just lift that burden off of their shoulders, specifically for solopreneurs. I know for a fact, when I was busy solopreneuring, much of the stuff I was working on could only get to a certain level. You can only scale so much. And so teams coming into place are really such an underrated scaling hack. But yeah, you really need to sit down and figure out, okay, who do I need to bring in, and is this the right time? What roles do I need to automate? What roles do I need a person? I think that's the beauty of entrepreneurship, that there's no like blueprint per se. Everyone's problem that they're solving is different. Everyone's business is different. And I think that's probably a fascinating element of the work that you do. You're seeing how people are tackling different challenges from different approaches, what's working, what's not working. And the truth is that there's no silver bullet or like one size fits all way about going about it. And maybe such can be said about life. There's no like one silver bullet, one thing that you have to do and such path that you have to take. I think that would just make life too easy. Like everyone would win. I
No, I think,
don't
yeah, life
know.
is too, it's made in a way that you need to navigate, and you need to navigate it using the wisdom that you've been given. Otherwise
That's
there's no
true.
point in having wisdom. There's no point in learning. There's no point. How do you apply,
Yes.
solution driven thought processes if you are not faced with challenges?
Absolutely. And I'm curious, as we get to the end of this conversation, of course, as an African ran podcast, we're seeing a daughter of the soil out there. We're saying, oh, are you coming back? Are you gonna do anything? Do you have any plans of setting up in Zim or working with founders in Africa? What are some of your immediate thoughts around that? Because currently you're based in the UK, but from our previous conversations, I know that that's something that you do think about a lot.
No, for sure. Africa, is pretty much the place where entrepreneurship will boom and is booming. And I think anyone who's not thinking of Africa right now, in the by 2027, you'll understand why. I think for me, I think my journey started. I've partnered with a company in Nigeria, hopefully working on a few projects. I won't mention what they are at the moment, but we will be looking at working around the space in terms of labor skills labor, getting skill sets like software engineers and things like that, to help out with projects in Africa. But also there's some interesting projects which I've been sort of watching closely. I haven't contacted the startups yet, but there is one in Zimbabwe which I'm kind of watching very closely. They've built a big platform, AI platform, which is spanning out throughout Africa. And I've kind of been watching them to see what they're going on.
I
You got
know
a
who that
smile on your
is.
face.
The founder is a friend of mine. If
Ah.
it's who I think it is, because there's probably one that is
Are you
doing really
serious?
well and scaling, even outside of
Yes.
Africa.
I think we're talking about the same person. But
Definitely.
yeah, it's such a weird, it's a small world, because I think when he dropped the, you know, the product he's actually producing, I absolutely loved what he was doing. And I thought, let me just watch and see what's going on. But I'm sure in the future we'll probably work together, because he's in two spaces that I'm super interested in. So the growth of AI in Africa is something that has to happen. AI specific to, you know, the landscape that we have in Africa is going to be key. And also, I think agriculture, because I believe Africa is going to be the food basket of the world, given what's happening in the whole world. A lot of attention and focus will be given to Africa to play that particular role. So food security is something that I'm super interested in. But as I said again, education for the children, digital skills, that's another thing that is on my heart. I'm currently working with some founders who are here in the UK who are looking to go into international trade, and it'll be trade between UK and Africa. So this is something that I'm doing as my side hustle, by the way, not through Essia, but it's my side hustle that I'm doing, and they are really, really promising. They are super excited about what they're doing, and they're still at the early stages, but we are really looking forward to going into Africa and seeing how, you know, international trade between those two, you know, continent, well, the continent of Africa and the UK can actually build new relationships, and build a new way of working. So yeah, I've got a few things up my sleeve, and I think, you know, give it time. I've given my timeline of 2027. Watch the space. I think everyone should be thinking of Africa. So definitely I have things that I want to do in Africa, and I'm certainly looking
Fantastic.
forward to getting that done.
Yeah, Wendy, we wish you all the best with that, and I'd be happy to make a warm intro. That gentleman that we're referring to, really great friend, and he's also a listener of this podcast, so
Oh, we see.
I'll send this to him when it's done. Yeah.
Amazing.
So
Okay.
we've reached the ending part of our conversation here in the boardroom, and we like to do something special at the end. We call this the elevator segment. So picture this: we've just had this conversation, and you're leaving our boardroom, headed off to the elevator, going down, and one of our interns quickly jumps into the elevator with you and has a couple of quick fire questions to ask you on your way down. Are you ready to step into the elevator?
Right, okay, let's do that.
I think it's interesting because you get a lot of elevator pitches, you know, as
And
someone who works at
do you
a
know, I do not like them myself. I don't
So
like them
here.
myself, but let's do this. Okay, let's give it a shot.
Awesome. First question is, you had mentioned that you like to read here and there, and super curious about what's happening out there in the world. What's one idea that's really fascinated you lately? It could be a concept or a theory of or way of life or something, but what's one idea that's
Okay.
been in your mind recently?
Yeah, there is one. Actually, a founder who pitched this. I'm not sure what she's doing because we couldn't invest in it because it wasn't in our area or our sector. But it's all about this concept of crisis management, right? Where you've got floods, you've got fire, you've got all sorts of things happening. She built a platform where wherever a disaster is happening, she will be able to mobilize all the emergency services that are needed to be able to reach those people, even in the most remote places. She also developed an app where people, if you're on the ground, you can download this app and be able to find the nearest place of shelter, nearest place for help. And I think it was at the time when she pitched it was, you know, it was so timely, but now it's even more timely with all the wars. Then you've got natural disasters happening. And that platform, honestly, I thought it was an absolutely amazing idea. And if that was rolled out through with governments backing it, it would make a huge difference because everyone operates in silos at the moment when it comes to definitely natural disasters.
Definitely. Second question would be, what's one thing that, or one opinion that you have that not many other people agree with you on? Or you think that it's, you know, kind of an outlier thing or approach that you have to life, yes, or business, etc.
Yes. You know the saying that people say, ideas don't amount to anything. It's the execution, yes, that matters, you know. Yes. And it's all about whoever executes. And sometimes it gets to the point where when founders have to be given equity, it's like, oh no, you know, you just came up with the ideas, the execution that matters. Actually, yeah, for me, ideas do matter. And ideas, yeah, actually do have value. And there is, I have figured out a way, that's my part of my side hustle that I'm doing. I have figured out a way of making ideas the most valuable thing that any business could have. I won't go too much into it, but wow, I believe ideas are valuable. They can be monetized.
Wow. Yeah, that's a new one. You know, if I think on the spectrum of what new things have I had this week? Yeah. Mm-hmm. This one is topping it. This one is topping it. Right. Oh. Last question. Mm. If you were to put up a billboard on the busiest street of your choosing, anywhere in the world, but super busy street, people pass it all the time, and you could write one message on it, what would you write?
Wow, that's a deep one, right?
I guess. It could be as deep or not deep as, you know, you could write anything, but just know that many people are passing there reading, yeah, it.
I would put a question and I would ask, who drives you, right? Who is your driver? And I guess when people think about who is your driver, you know, like, what does she mean? You know, but yeah, okay, that's the question I would put. Who drives you? Do you want to answer that question? Who drives you?
For me, it's God, for sure. That's my internal compass in terms of decision-making. Who do I think I am? Who should inform my self-identity? Mm. For me, that's mostly, yeah, it.
That makes two, yeah, of us. Yeah, definitely. So people have got different, obviously, religions and beliefs. But whoever your driver is determines your outcome and how big you will become or who you will become. So, yeah, that's what I would put on a busy street. Who is your driver? Especially you said people are driving. So, yeah, yeah, it'd be good. Who is your driver? Who drives you?
That's incredible. Wendy, thank you so much for your time today. We have
Thank you for having me.
Our conversation here in the boardroom. Yeah. A couple of things that I'm leaving here with is, you know, just reassurance. For context, I think I'm at a stage of my life, you know, I'm out of uni, early professional, so, you know, started working, but, you know, also have a couple of side hustles here and there that I want to turn into full-time hustles, but also you understand the value of working at certain places and having money to invest in these things. So, you know, this conversation has given me in particular a lot of clarity around some of the ways that I should approach my decision making when considering what to put effort towards and, you know, when should I now, you know, take on something 100%, what support structures I would need also as a founder, And I think most importantly, the fact that you've reassured us that we're in the right place. Us being here in Africa, sometimes we feel like we have to get out of here and go to greener pastures. But it's like, yeah, okay, we also have the opportunity to create those for ourselves here. So, Wendy, thank you so much for your time. I hope you've enjoyed your time here in the boardroom.
Certainly. I wish we had a bit longer, but yeah.
Yeah, no,
time went so quickly.
We can always do a part two, and I'd be happy for us to get into conversations about certain industries, pick them apart, and just see, what's working, what's not, what's scaling, what's not. I think that would be a very fascinating conversation for our audience.
Certainly.
From myself and the team in the Boardroom Banter podcast, I've been your host, Sean Karanja, joined by Wendy Mubaiwa. Signing off and wishing you all a fantastic and productive October ahead. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast today. If you're new here, we release episodes on Tuesdays where we focus on speaking to individuals like Wendy and picking apart their journeys. How did they get to where they are? What's exciting for them in their industries? So be sure to go and look at our previous episodes for a bit of inspiration. We talk to the most incredible people on this podcast, as you can see from this conversation, and we appreciate your support so much. So with that, have yourselves a fantastic week and see you on the next episode of the Boardroom Banter podcast.
Thank you.